Dr. Jeffrey Halstead has been Canandaigua's hometown dentist for more than 35 years, offering routine dental care as well as cosmetic dentistry, implants, and dentures by their highly trained and experienced staff. Visit them online at canandaiguadentistry.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Josh Durso, and this is Inside the FLX. Today we are going in depth on dissolving a village. Wolcott residents will vote in just a couple months on their future after a petition received enough support to force a referendum. If those last two sentences sounded like Latin to you, that's okay. This is the program for you because my guest is Matt Horn, Director of Municipal Services at MRB Group, and we are going to be talking all about dissolution, all the pros, the cons, how it works, everything. Matt, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
A lot of people listening or watching are going to be like, this has to be the driest topic you've ever thought of, Josh.
You always invite me in for those.
I promise. So you, I think, are the foremost expert on this or one of the foremost experts on this topic in the region here. So that's why I wanted to have you in to talk about this, how it works and everything like that. Because I think a lot of people don't understand the process, even once they're actually getting into it. Yeah. Before we start, because a lot of your work involves talking to different people, working in different communities, when dissolution starts to happen in terms of a petition has been brought forward and we're counting down to a vote, do people at that stage realize what's happening, or does a lot of education typically have to happen in that 60 to 90 day window?
Yeah, I think very few people realize what's happening. And, you know, in this case in particular, but certainly in others, I've paid a lot of attention to social media chatter, if you will, and you hear kind of wild speculation about what will happen. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be more expensive. And the simple answer is you don't know what you don't know, right, until you really start peeling the onion. And so I think people who are sitting on the sidelines or who are just scrolling past this super dry headline, if you're in one of these affected communities, now's the time to really educate yourself about what's on the horizon.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because it can feel like it comes out of absolutely nowhere,
yeah.
Which is often the case when we're talking about different communities. Obviously, several in the region have dissolved. We're in Seneca Falls, of course, one of the first to dissolve. Macedon, I believe, was the last one to dissolve. You had Lyons mixed in there as well. Wolcott could become the next, but long road to get there, actually. We've got some time. Can you walk us through what the dissolution process actually is from day the petition gets handed in at Village Hall to potentially the day when the lights are getting shut off in that village?
Yeah, so the laws actually changed in the last 10 years. Actually, a little bit more than that. Time's flying. 2010, New York State passed a law called the Citizens Empowerment, Reorganization Empowerment Act. And what that act provided for, what that law now provides for, is the ability for local residents, voters actually, local voters to begin the process. So historically, prior to 2010, the local government itself, the village, let's use village as an example, although villages, special districts are all eligible for dissolution. So in the case of a village, the village board would say, that, you know what, we've had enough of it, or it's getting financially challenging, every year it's getting harder, or it just makes sense for whatever variety of reasons. Let's put a plan together. And the village board would commission a plan. And you don't have to use a consultant, but some people do. And you sit around the table and you say, what would life after the village look like? Who would plow the roads? Who would fill the potholes? Who would pick up the garbage? How would the water and sewer get handled? That kind of stuff. And you put that plan in front of voters, and voters in the village, we'll come back to that. That's an important distinction, right? Voters in the village say, hey, that makes sense to me, or that doesn't make sense to me. That path is still a viable path, still a legal path. A board can determine that they'd like to move forward with dissolution. In that case, the residents see the plan, and the residents of the village see the plan and vote on that path. if the residents say that sounds good, then the plan itself will say, here is the clock and the path toward dissolution, right? Mm-hmm. So it might say, the law says it can't be less than 45 days from adoption of the plan, or a passage of the referendum, I should say. It can't be more than 45 days from passage of the referendum, but there is no backstop to it. You can say 3 years. We're going to take 3 years to slowly wind this clock down, or we're going to take 46 days to quickly wind this clock down. I don't recommend the 46-day approach. So that's the case of a board initiated a dissolution. The 2010 law added a path, and that's the path that we're hearing about more recently, which is the citizen initiated approach. In the citizen initiated approach, you have to get a percentage of local voters to sign a petition that says we are interested in dissolution of local government. If you get enough signatures, and it's a percentage of registered voters in the village, if you get enough voters to sign the petition, it's certified, it goes to referendum. Once the referendum is passed, the local government has, the village government has, and I'll come back to why I keep hammering on that. The village government has 180 days to develop a plan, 6 months to develop a plan. Then they adopt the plan, and the plan says, again, no less than 45 days. From now, the village of X will dissolve. Once the board adopts that plan, in the citizen-initiated approach, and I know now we're really in the weeds, but in the citizen-initiated approach, once the board adopts that plan, residents of the village get another bite at the apple, and they can say, hey, that plan stinks. There's no way I want to give up my police department or give up my personal garbage service or whatever the plan is calling for. Again, you know, this is a made-up case, but hey, I don't like the way this looks, so I'm going to pass a petition for another referendum. And in the case of the second referendum, we are actually voting on the plan. This plan says we are going to modify law enforcement in some way, modify fire in some way, water, sewer, roads, those things. And then if that referendum passes, only then does the dissolution clock start. If it fails, there's actually a four-year moratorium before you can consider dissolution again. So that citizen-initiated path is relatively new, less than 15 years old. And it's a little more complex, but it does give residents two bites at the apple instead of just the one.
In the citizen-initiated version, first referendum goes yes, dissolve, dissolution plan is created. Can the town board reject the plan? Is there a caveat in there where the town board can crank the brake up and say, nah, we're not going forward?
So I have a phraseology here, so I'm going to preference my phrase or qualify my phraseology by saying, There's no good or bad with respect to the entire concept of dissolution. There's no right or wrong answer for every single community, but I think there is a flaw in the total, not just citizen initiated, but in the total dissolution conversation, which is the town resident outside of the village, the town board, but you know, by the same extension, has no say in dissolution. Similarly, when the residents, so let's say the residents or the village board approves that dissolution plan, that plan is not binding upon the town board. So I'll use an example. The dissolution plan might say, we propose a town-wide police department, because in a village you may have a village police department. In the case of the town of village of Seneca Falls, the village dissolution plan said we propose a town-wide police department. The town on dissolution took that plan and agreed, and today we have a town-wide police department. It was under no obligation to do so. There are very limited cases where if and they're too complex really to even dig at, but residents like any other time could come forward with an Article 78 to say, hey, there is a dissolution plan and the town is ignoring it. I wouldn't suggest a town board ignore it, but a town board has to take a rational look on behalf of the entire town now and say, these parts of the dissolution plan work for us, maybe these don't. And so what can happen in a dissolution process is that village residents vote on something that they expect to see happen beyond dissolution, and that may or may not happen because the town board's not bound to that document. It's not a town document, it's a village document.
Debts, I would assume, are probably the only real transferable thing in this process, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So and if you look at the town of Seneca Falls dissolution plan, they really focused on, and it was like a pioneering document, really differentiated itself in that it really focused on implementation and cost of implementation. Mm-hmm. This has to happen first, and this is going to cost this much. So debt is something that in New York so far, in every case that I've studied, the debt transfers. But it doesn't have to transfer in its entirety to the full town, right? So New York State allows for the creation of debt districts. And so what you might find is that when a village dissolves, for projects that were beneficial only to village residents, we might draw a little village debt district. And so until that debt is paid off, you'll see on your tax bill, village debt district, right? Mm-hmm. So that transfers. But I have read cases, and I can't cite them, but I've read cases where even that was challenged. Yeah. To say, hey, these were village debts, and the village doesn't exist anymore. And yeah. So, you know, the full faith and credit of the town doesn't apply. But in every case I've studied in New York, the debt transfers in some form or fashion.
We're going to come back to that town-village divide and how there can be some animus on both sides with that part of it. But kind of a structural question here. What can or cannot be dissolved? We're talking about villages.
Yeah.
Predominantly, that, I believe, is what has been dissolved to date.
Yep.
But, you know, Jackie Augustine and I were kind of having a discussion a few weeks ago on another program saying, you know, looking at kind of this idea that if you look at the language, that's maybe not all that can be dissolved, and perhaps there are some other avenues where, you know, dissolution could happen at a town level and go up into county. From your perspective, what cannot be dissolved?
So if you, a great resource for this, and if you're in one of these communities where either there's dissolution on the table or there's scuttle about dissolution, I really encourage you to go to the Department of State, the New York State Department of State website. They've got a bunch of different process documents and policy briefings, process briefings on this. And in those documents, they talk about special districts and villages as being the only institutions that may dissolve, right? Everything else is really considered a merger, right? So we were contacted a bunch of years ago pre-pandemic, and it fizzled out because of the pandemic. But we were contacted a bunch of years ago by a set of communities in Otsego County, four towns, and the four towns were looking at merging into either one or two towns. And there is a process, particularly under that Citizens Re-Empowerment Program, for town mergers. And so that's a case where you might be able to play around a little bit. Cities are much more difficult. I actually just read this in preparation for today, as a matter of fact. I read about a third leg of dissolution that I'd never heard of before. And I want to do a bunch more research on it, but it's called county-initiated dissolution. And according to the Department of State, when the county determines that a unit of local government within its boundaries should be dissolved for a host of reasons, including cities, that the county can put forward a dissolution plan that shows the transfer of local government assets and services and programs across a county level. But in that instance, unlike the villages, every voter in the county gets to decide on that. Yeah. It's not just a city thing. So there are a bunch of years ago, some folks from Geneva were engaged in pretty heavy conversation about city town, right? When I remember when I first started working in Geneva, the city tax rate was about $18 per thousand, yeah. And the town tax rate was zero, right? And it's interesting to think about. I live on Castle Street in Geneva in an apartment in downtown, or I live way out on the lake 5 miles south of Geneva. Those are pretty, that's an easy dichotomy to recognize. But a harder one was someplace like Reed Street in Geneva, where on the east side of Reed Street, you're a city resident. On the west side of Reed Street, you're a town resident. On the east side, you pay $18 a thousand. On the west side, you pay zero. Same water, same sewer, same street, same access to parks and facilities and everything. And so there was a lot of this conversation about, hey, could the city dissolve? There's, to my knowledge, that would require special legislation at the state level. Batavia studied it for a long time. And you can still find those Batavia documents hanging around out there. Batavia and Genesee County studied it. But it's... all of those things are kind of mechanisms by which dissolution or merger can occur. Counties are actually a constitutional creation, and so you'd need to seek not just state approval, but I think a constitutional amendment to consolidate a county or merge a county.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now that I think about it, one of the more high profile cases that I didn't mention off the top that I remember really catching a lot of debate at the ground level was the village of Rushville.
Yeah.
They didn't pursue it, but there you have a community that's literally split between two counties.
Oh, yeah.
Two towns. Truly, dissolving would, to put it lightly, be a mess.
Yeah.
Scenario.
And there's a great paper out there. The Rockefeller Institute wrote, they studied non-financial reasons why people choose to not dissolve or not yet not pursue dissolution, and Rushville wasn't listed, but it's a perfect example. All the financial things said this is probably a good deal for the average resident, right? Mm-hmm. But the community said, we believe in our local institutions, we believe in government closest to the people, we want our own library, we want our own, and we just finished a comprehensive plan there a year or so ago. And when we ask about their proudest moments, that was one of their proudest moments, that the community was able to rally. And these were residents, not politicians, that the community was able to rally to say, hey, let's keep our identity. Let's keep our institutions. And so it's an interesting case.
That's going to be a theme we come back to. What is, when you think about the process, you mentioned folks who live in the town that surrounds whatever village might be dissolving. What's the biggest thing that the process lacks? Is it that town engagement?
Yeah, it really is. I think that's the number one thing. We were speaking with some communities up in the North Country about, or Adirondacks, I guess, about dissolution. And in that case, the town and village approached it together. And it was a true fact-finding mission. Like, we all really want to understand what this. There was no ballot initiative contemplated at that point. They just really wanted to know the answers. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such a holistic way of doing it. Like, have the town leadership at the table, have the village leadership at the table, and really parse this out when the heat isn't on. In the case of this most recent one, I get nervous about the heat being on. It's gonna, the vote is scheduled in March, and the report is under development right now. That's a real fast conversation. But these communities out in the Adirondacks decided, let's bring the town in under the tent. Let's have that conversation now. And I just think from a policy perspective, there's, I get back to no good or bad. Thinking about Monroe County, you can think of urban towns, right? Very urban towns. So there is no characterization of urban versus rural. I think of Lyons. Lyons has this cool little village, they call it a hamlet now, this cool village, and then this rural setup. Yeah. That town had been built to manage that rural part of the community. And in rural parts of the community, service demands are different. The village was set up to address more urban things. And so when the village dissolves, it's not whether the town is good or bad at managing these now urban things, it's whether they're built to manage them. So now you have to stop and say, okay, we have this whole new thing in the heart of our community now that we're responsible, the town board is responsible for. How do we build a government that's responsive to that? And Seneca Falls had to go through the same thing. And basically any community that has any kind of urbanization and, you know, to deal with, it's something that towns that are built for rural aren't built to handle.
If you had your pick, how much time is kind of the sweet spot of enough time to create a good plan, to really wrap your arms all the way around everything involved and get a good sense for what happens if we do and what happens if we don't? What's that timeline typically look like?
Yeah. So for me, it depends on what the aim is here. The reason I love the dissolution conversation is, we were talking a little bit before the session here about my job before Geneva was doing city building in the Southeast and out West, communities that chartered as cities in 2006 and 2007. And the thing I loved about that was building a city from the ground up, not physically, but policy and law and zoning and you know, departments. Here's how the public works department's going to work. And what you did was really look at it from a fresh perspective. This vast area of land had been served by county government since county government existed, right? And now it's going to be serviced by this new local government entity. How will that look? And I think dissolution offers the same opportunity, right? To say, how will this new government approach work? And 180 days seems light to have that conversation, right? And you know, when I was a local government leader myself, the word consultant was a difficult word to say out loud, and it's even more difficult in my current role. People have certain thoughts about consultants, and sure, consultants want to drag the process out. That's what people think. But if you were creating a new local government from scratch, would 6 months be enough for you to do that? I'm not sure that it would be. I don't know that there's a magic number. But I recognize that the state should put some kind of statutory deadline on it, so that, and they put that specific statutory deadline in place explicitly so local governments didn't drag their feet. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were a village board member who had been, you know, been balloted by a dissolution initiative, your instinct, if you didn't want to dissolve, would be, yeah, we'll take a look at it, you know, and we'll stretch our legs and wander around it and kick the tires for a couple of years. I understand we got to have a drop dead date, but we're building a government from scratch here. We need to have town leadership in the room. We need to have county leadership in the room. The state does a great job actually of providing Department of State technical support. Let's get those guys in the room. If you don't hire a consultant, don't hire a consultant. You know better. You know your community well. So get all of those people in the room and say, let's build a business plan for a new place, right? Or a new way of managing this old place. And that take, you know, put a, if I were going to put a statutory, put a year statutory deadline on it, but encourage people to be done faster. But it's got to be right. You know, this is forever.
Yeah. What's one thing or the best thing about the process as it exists in New York State? What do you think is best about that process, or maybe the best outcome of that process?
Yeah. I mean, I do think the fact that there is a requirement for a plan to be put in place, right? That the requirements of the plan really ask you to needle down to some of the most critical elements. How will debt be satisfied? How will equipment be transferred? And you know, if you're a local government leader in a community without a big staff, and you're a part-time person, you're a farmer in the daytime, or you're working a factory, or you're a school teacher in the daytime, you haven't done this in a while, right? You've been coming to board meetings, you've been dealing with constituent issues, and the machine kind of runs itself. Yep. Well, now we're required to open up the hood and get under there and uncover the machine. So like most planning processes, it becomes a real learning experience. And if residents are willing to engage in that, they're going to learn something too. And so, like I said, when we opened about the social media chatter and the people who are just making proclamations about what will happen or what won't happen, I do like the process for that part of it, the idea that you are required to have a clear plan for every element of this transition.
Let's talk about some of that chatter and some of the bigger, broader things that come up when we're talking about dissolution. First one is the number one one that I think you probably see and I see. Taxes are going to be lower.
Yeah.
Right or wrong? Complicated answer.
Yeah, it is complicated. And I was just, for who? Right? For who? So, you know, and I don't have the exact numbers, but I can tell you, you know, about dynamics. So we'll look at the at Seneca Falls as an example, right? So in Seneca Falls, the dissolution plan said, we want to have a townwide police department. And the town board said, we do too. We're good to go. So they took on a townwide police department. They took on townwide services. I'll take a little side road just real quickly to, as an anecdote. A couple of years ago, the town board here in Seneca Falls was going through their budgeting process. And the budgeting process, you know, at the time, the town supervisor was trying to reduce the levy by, or I'm sorry, reduce the budget, the expense budget by about $1 million, a little more than $1 million. And so he was entertaining all ideas, right? Let's entertain all ideas. And one of the ideas that jumped out that made me think about dissolution was they had an expenditure in their budget to replace trash receptacles in the village, the things you put at the curb, right, toters, in the former village. And we're going to spend X thousand dollars this year to replace receptacles in the former village. And that's how they refer to it in the town board, in the former village. And so the supervisor, I believe, looked at that expenditure and said, we're going to zero that out. That doesn't make sense anymore. I understand why it was there, and I understand why it was there through transition. We're beyond transition. That's X thousand dollars that now we can knock off that $1 million that we're trying to find. And another supervisor raised their hand, or another board member raised their hand and said, well, geez, I don't know about that. That's a nice service to have. And someone else on the board said, well, if we're going to do it for one, we got to do it for everybody. Is that a motion? Yes. Is that a second? Yeah. So we were trying to reduce the cost, but we increased the cost. So it's an example of, you know, this for who question, right? So prior to dissolution, and I don't mean to, I love the Seneca Falls Police Department, great leadership, great chief. I'm only using this in the case study as an example. Good investment by my estimate. So, but prior to dissolution, the town was served by the Seneca County Sheriff's Department from a law enforcement perspective. Yep. Today, their service level went up because they have a localized presence, but they have to pay for it, right? And so let's use round numbers and say pre-dissolution, the village rate was $15 a thousand and the town rate was zero. Post-dissolution, the village rate went down substantially and the town rate went up substantially. And I want to say, you know, in recent years, and please don't quote me on this, but order of magnitude, in recent years, that number was in the $10 per thousand range, right? Yeah. So if I'm a village resident, my taxes went down by $6. If I'm a town resident, my taxes went up by X, right? And so less expensive for who and at what cost. In the town of Lyons, they also recommended a townwide police department. The town did not accept that recommendation.
Yeah.
And so the cost went down. Mm-hmm. So it's all about your expectation for service.
Yeah. Does government automatically become more efficient just because you have one less layer? Because that's one of the themes that really stands out to me is this assumption from a lot of folks that, well, the village government's just getting in the way. Mm-hmm. That's why we're not growing. We'll get to the growth thing later.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have to tackle that now.
Yeah.
But in terms of efficiency, does it automatically mean more efficient government?
No, for the reason we talked about before, which is, what is it built to do? Efficient and effective, right? So thinking about that downtown conversation, that village center conversation, is the town of X built to serve the village of X's infrastructure? If it's not, and it does nothing, and we say, we're just going to continue to operate as the town. That plan isn't binding on us. Everybody will get the same level of service that town residents have always received. That is neither efficient or effective, right? Because different infrastructure requires a different look. And so I think you can build it to be more efficient, but not on its face and not because we voted this afternoon to make it so.
Mm-hmm. Financial incentives. What are the financial incentives of dissolving? There's some state incentives on the financial side. They're short-term, right? So when you think about short-term, long-term, what are the financial incentives typically to dissolving?
Yeah, and I want to qualify this too by saying these incentives, and I was just speaking to a supervisor of a town where dissolution had occurred in the last couple of years, and I said, you know, that incentive, you know, that's reliable revenue. And I was talking about, you know, short-term revenue versus long-term revenue, and we were talking about what's reliable revenue. And he said that incentive is reliable revenue as long as the legislature says it is. It's not constitutional. It's not anything that, and I don't mean it's unconstitutional. I mean, it's not spelled out as a right in the state constitution. Right. It's a law that can be changed. And so what the effective benefit though is a percentage of the village levy for a period of time gets allocated from the state to the town. And I can't give you the exact percentages off the top of my head, but what it effectively does is say, we're going to consider this, let's call it 25%, because that number is sticking in my head for some reason. But we're going to take this as a 75% overall savings and 25% incentive for the town to continue to operate and to take on this new burden. So you do get a percentage of the levy from the village. There are also some incentives to support the dissolution effort. So citizens can make application for a grant, mm-hmm. Or boards can as well make application for a grant to pay for a dissolution study. So that's another incentive. Outside of dissolution, we're talking about mergers and consolidations and even just shared services. There are incentives that allocate a percentage of realized savings, right? So unfortunately, in New York, you never get credit for things you did before the law was passed, but yeah. they passed this shared services initiative a bunch of years ago. The cities of Canandaigua and Geneva had been sharing an assessor, sharing an IT department. Under the law, under the new incentive, we would have been entitled to receive a grant from the state for a portion of that savings. And today you can't. Anything you did after passing the law, you get a grant for a portion of that savings. So the big incentive, the levy percentage incentive for now is, if you're looking at the screen, permanent in that the law does not sunset. The law does not say after 5 years or after 10 years. But when the legislature finds itself in a pinch, you never know what they'll cut.
Yeah, and it's a little more subject to flavor of the day politics. You never know what that's going to be, you know, 5 months from now, much less 5 years. Yeah. Loss of identity.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest thing that communities wrestle with going through this process, villages especially. How significant is that? And should that really, at the end of the day, perhaps be maybe the number one thing that people are thinking about beyond just the dollars and cents of maybe we save a few bucks over the course of 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's to the degree that there is a I won't even say difference, but a alternate identities between a town and a village. And I'll use Mark Venuti over in the town of Geneva used to say, city and town or village and town are like cousins. They have the same last name, but they don't have the same identity. They don't have the same personality. And so in a place where the village has a really distinct set of traditions, a history, neighborhoods and downtown and those kinds of things, then that is a high bar to climb for someone who has lived in the village for their whole lives. I was born and raised here, and this is what the village means to me. Even little things like, not, I mean, this isn't little, but things like, we were just talking about the library. We've got a little reading room that the town probably isn't going to take over. Yep. We've got our village hall where I can come in and ask questions of people who know, who've been doing this work for a long time. Those are all real soft, I mean, there is an expense to them, but real soft ways that people identify with their hometown. And if that changes in any way, on both sides, right? In Geneva, the town would probably be the first one to say, hey, we have our own identity over here. Yeah. And it's not what the city's identity is. But certainly in the case of these villages, that's what we hear the most from people. It's the hardest to quantify, but it's we always say people buy why you do things, not what you do. And people buy why they live in a village, not what the village offers.
Yeah. Okay. So the last couple here are linked together, and they're I think the biggest ones, especially since I've seen this theme crop up with the Wolcott situation. There's an assumption that the reason why rural communities, particularly those like Wolcott, a village, isn't growing is because village government is getting in the way, and before we get your thoughts on this, I just would like to say that while in theory that is possible, there are things going on, there are trends in New York State across the board that you cannot overlook. Population decline is one of them. And the decline of rural communities over the last 25 years in New York State is something that cannot be overlooked and will not be fixed by simply dissolving your village government. Now, floor is yours. I just have to say that because it seems like this very simplistic view of, well, the reason why we're not growing or there aren't developers putting down, large businesses or housing developments is because village government's in the way,
yeah,
or clumsy town government's in the way. And I know that so much of your work on the planning side involves digging into the identity and digging into the actual, like, creation of a good plan that allows for growth. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that when people start to think that dissolution is a fast route to, hey, we're going to be growing next year if we just dissolve our village?
Right. It's a great question. And it goes right back to that, what is your town built to do?
Yeah.
Right? What is your town built to do? And what kind of growth do you want to see? So I think it's not accurate to say that, again, removing a layer of government is gonna instantly translate, or even in the long run translate by itself to growth.
Yeah,
there are so many factors at play. There, it is possible. Mike Fitzgerald has a piece in the Finger Lakes Times today, where he was talking through a comment that had been made on social media about, the only way to fix these non-responsive, and I'm paraphrasing, but the only way to fix this non-responsive village board is to dissolve. And Mike's take was, there's a bunch of ways to fix this non-responsive village board, yeah, and dissolution might just put you in the hands of a non-responsive town board or a non-responsive, a non-responsive county board or whatever. And again, setting Wolcott aside, people, companies, stores have lots of reasons for locating in places. If I get back to the city town example or the village town example, in villages today, you see factories, you see convenience stores, you see big box stores, you see movie theaters in one village. And in another village, nothing, right? It's hollowed out. So the layer of government, if you go, for instance, go downstate, and maybe that's a bad word, but go downstate and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of villages, and they're densely populated and vibrant and working and. And it's because the market works, right? The market works. And so when I go to different communities and see growth or decline and see vibrancy or lack of vibrancy, it's very rarely the community form, the form of government, that is in the way or not in the way. The and not to pick on anybody, if you look at the dissolutions over the last 10 years in New York State, do the digging for yourself. Ask how much growth happened in the community, in the towns today where villages were once before. Did it grow or didn't it grow? And then that would be a fun conversation to have.
It's an interesting dichotomy, I think, because you can be going through this dissolution process and future growth could be one of the leading, among the public, could be one of the leading reasons for dissolving government. But then I think about, and I live in Webster, I drive down 104 a few times a week, and I follow very closely the chatter in communities like the town of Ontario, Williamson. And as much as people will say they want to see growth, when growth starts to happen, when housing developments start to be proposed at the planning board meetings, there is intense resistance to it.
Yeah.
And it's just very interesting to me because you have these two competing ideas that I feel like are floating around people's brains at the same time.
Yep.
And yet, when the rubber meets the road, it creates a scenario where largely people in these rural communities, they're opposed to the kind of growth that would actually help them.
Absolutely. And the question is your town development infrastructure, which is to say the zoning and building permits and, you know, that machinery that moves growth through the pipeline, is it built to do what you want it to do? When we work on zoning or development regulation, we have two markers. One is it clear?
Mm-hmm.
Can Josh read it and he's not an architect? That's important.
Yeah.
And is it productive? Is it putting out what you wanted it to put out? And we have a lot of ways to measure whether that's happening or not. And we go through the community. People say zoning's just fine, and we'll go through a community and take a picture of a space that's clear, just built, that zoning is clearly not just fine, or development regulation clearly isn't just fine. And so if you go through communities with a village or without a village, if the infrastructure is broken, it doesn't matter. If the development infrastructure is broken, then it doesn't matter what you want or what layer of government is administering it. You have to get it right. Back to that maybe year-long business plan for our new local government.
Mm-hmm.
What does the zoning look like? What does the development regulation look like? Where do we want to grow? If my gripe is my village isn't growing, then you want somebody to look at why before you just pull the plug on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And then last thread here, and it is essentially connected. Housing and zoning, there is always, I think, this assumption whether a village has intense zoning or more intense zoning than a town might, that all of a sudden these standards are just going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
And, oh no, I have a farm in the middle of nowhere and I'm going to have these new rules and regs plopped on me. Typically not the case, right?
Absolutely not, yeah. In Seneca Falls, they were under a timing constraint. And effectively what happened was they pulled the zoning map from the village and strapped it to the top of the zoning map for the town and said all the regulations that used to apply in the village still apply in the village and don't affect the town at all. So then what you want to do is as you grow and as you get settled into your new role, maybe take another look at future land use or comprehensive planning and say, all right, now that we're not bound by these imaginary lines of village and town, where would we grow now? Where's the infrastructure there already? Where are the traffic counts? Where's the development pressure coming and how do we want it to look? Those are all questions you can ask, but absolutely not. You should never worry about whether regulation is going to overtake you just because of a dissolution.
When you, if you were giving advice to just the average run-of-the-mill resident who might be living in Wilkett, maybe living in another community down the road that is thinking about dissolution, what would you encourage them to think most about while going through that process as a resident?
Yeah. I would sit down and make a list of the things I love about living in the village. And then I would show up at that planning process and ask questions about how those things will be affected. What will happen to my garbage service and what will happen to it. And that's why I said it's not good, maybe not good or bad. but different, and how, right? And so I think Wolcott, for example, has shown some tremendous foresight in getting a plan together up front to say, hey, let's try to answer as many of these questions now before mm-hmm. people go to the ballot the first time, because they're still going to have to go, they're still going to open themselves up to a second permissive referendum. But what's happening right now in the village of Wolcott is a firm that's done this a lot, and that's done it in big places and small places. A firm is going through a process right now of helping village leadership say, here's how transfer of services might look.
Yeah.
If I'm a resident of Wolcott, then right now I'd want to get up and go in there and say, yeah, okay, how are building permits going to change? How is snow plowing going to change? And get those answers so that when you go to the ballot, you're informed. And then for those of you who might be living in a community that doesn't have that, because the law doesn't require that you do a plan before the vote in a citizen-initiated referendum, when that plan shifts over to the adoption phase, go back, monitor that, make sure that the village board is on board. And then a second thing that you can do that may or may not be fruitful is to go to town leadership and say, hey, the dissolution plan says this. Would you like to go on the record with what you plan to do with it? And again, going on the record as one town supervisor or as one member of a town board is worth what the conversation you and I are having today, right?
Right.
Because when they sit down and they're exercising their actual voting power, that's when it matters. But at least hearing from them on what their concerns are, what the likelihood of having these services come out the way the plan says they are, that should give you some level of comfort or discomfort to say, I don't think I can support this because I don't think the town board's going to support this. And if they don't support it, then the plan's worthless. Or I feel totally comfortable. The town board's on board. The village board's on board. I'm going to save a little coin. You know, let's go make this happen. So be informed. That was the longest answer for two simple words. Be informed.
Matt, appreciate the time. Thanks for taking it today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, that's going to do it for this edition of Inside the FLX. For archived episodes, you can find Inside the FLX on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the iHeartRadio app. We will see you next week.